AM and FM, Seattle.
CBS News. For President Ford, two critical days of negotiations begin in Helsinki. I'm Jerry Landay reporting on the CBS radio network. The working day is about to start in Helsinki, where 35 government leaders have assembled for what's been called the Super Summit on European Security. Mostly formality attends the event itself, the signing of an agreement ratifying the post-war borders of Europe. The substance of the conference to occur in private meetings among major heads of state. President Ford meets with Premier Karamanlis of Greece Wednesday, Prime Minister Demirel of Turkey Thursday, with the dual aim of promoting movement toward a resolution of the Cyprus crisis and salvaging American bases in Turkey. Tuesday, Turkish authorities completed their administrative takeover of 25 American military bases in retaliation for the House vote against removing the arms embargo. Don Webster reports from Ankara.
The change brought about by the House of Representatives' vote to continue the embargo of arms to Turkey means that 8,000 U.S. servicemen are now stationed here, but unable to perform their duties. Many of these men are skilled electronic technicians who specialize in the surveillance of Russia, and obviously that many skilled men can't stand idle indefinitely. Now the question is, what happens? Will the Turks close some of the bases permanently? Will the House reverse itself? It seems unlikely in the near future. And will Turkish-U.S. relationships continue to dwindle? Don Webster, CBS News, Ankara, Turkey.
More news in a moment.
Give your cold a fist to contact.
Summertime is a rotten time to catch a cold. You miss so much. Then remember, 6 or 3 or 1, and take Contac. To keep medication working in your system up to 12 continuous hours against sneezing, runny nose, and congestion, you'd need 6 cold tablets, 2 every 4 hours, or 3 cold pills, 1 every 4 hours, or just 1 Contac capsule. Just 1. For aches and fever, the others contain aspirin. Contac doesn't. 6 or 3 or 1. Take Contac only as directed. Contact, number one cold medicine in the whole world.
Led by the United States and Mexico, 16 member countries of the Organization of American States have voted to remove trade and diplomatic sanctions against Cuba. The anti-Castro quarantine, just 11 years old, is now formally dissolved, opening the way for the gradual normalization of relations between Washington and Havana. After a deadlock of 8 months in the Senate, Democrat John Durkin of New Hampshire has accepted a challenge by Republican Louis Wyman to let New Hampshire voters select their junior senator in a special election. Durkin took the disputed election to the Senate in January after a recount gave Wyman a two-vote edge. In Manchester, New Hampshire, Durkin explained his change of heart.
I don't want to be voted into the Senate by the members of the U.S. Senate. I want to be there with no doubt as to who sent John Durkin. And more importantly, why? There is only one way to make this clear. So let's get on with the election.
Durkin to face Wyman at the polls again, most likely in October. The Federal Energy Administrator, Frank Zarb, has offered Democratic legislators a carrot to win support for President Ford's compromise energy program. Zarb says the president will remove a 60-cent-a-barrel fee on the import of refined oil products if Congress accepts the administration plan to phase out price controls on domestic oil over 39 months. Zarb estimated the concession would save users of imported heating oil a total of over $1 million a day. Senators have voted themselves an annual increase in pay tied to the cost of living. Also in line for the salary increase would be the 435 members of the House, federal judges, top military officers, and Vice President Rockefeller. The measure now goes to the House. President Ford has endorsed a limited pay increase of 5%, some 3% less than the congressional measure calls for. More CBS News in a moment.
Easy day, settle back. Pop a cap, rain on the great unexpected beer.
Friends are a good reason to keep any beer on hand, but especially Michelob. it's always an unexpected pleasure.
Right on the great taste of Michelob.
The unexpected pleasure.
The great taste of Michelob.
The unexpected pleasure.
Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Tavern keepers were amazed when a carriage turned unheralded into the dooryard and outstepped the President of the United States. The coachman would investigate the stables, the President, the rooms. The President is George Washington. The writing is from Time Magazine's bicentennial essay this week by historian James Thomas Flexner, a revealing report on how informal the presidency once was and how formidable that office has become today. Each week, every week, Time puts a world of information at your fingertips. Pick up a copy today.
The Federal Election Commission has voted unanimously to abolish secret pools of cash used by congressmen and senators to pay personal and office expenses. The commission would require that all secret funds be reported publicly and counted as campaign contributions against the legal limit of $35,000 for senators, $25,000 for congressmen. Congress has 30 working days to veto the new regulation or to accept it. I'm Jerry Landay, CBS News.
Radio Mystery Theater presents Come In. Welcome. I'm E.G. Marshall. Thus conscience does make cowards of us all. A quote, naturally, and almost as naturally from Shakespeare. On the other hand, like proverbs, quotes tend to contradict themselves. It was Oliver Goldsmith who said, "Conscience is a coward, and those faults it has not strength enough to prevent, it seldom has justice enough to accuse." That contradiction is what this story is all about.
What are you doing in that closet?
Hester, I was just trying to make myself at home.
Never poke your nose into anything in this house that isn't your business.
I didn't mean to.
What's that you have in your hand?
It's so queer. All leather and steel and buckles and things. I don't know what it is.
Nor is it your business to. While you stay here, don't you ever meddle with anything that doesn't belong to you. That's the first and last thing you have to learn about Malvern Grange.
Our mystery drama, Afraid to Live, Afraid to Die, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by Ian Martin and stars Jada Rowland and Ann Petoniak. It is sponsored in part by the Florida Orange Growers and Buick Motor Division. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
The following fable is presented to make you want to buy a Buick.
From Mom, I got my practical side.
Christmas, oh, just get me a nice mop, son.
From Dad, I got my fun-loving side.
Go fly a kite, kid.
So, being practical and fun-loving, naturally, I got a Buick Skylark. Being the only V6-powered American compact, it's very practical. And being a Buick, it's a lot of fun to drive. As Mom says...
A wise decision, son.
Or, as my father would say...
Nice car, kid. Let's go shoot some pool.
Buick. Dedicated to the free spirit in just about everyone.
A prenatal care message from the March of Dimes.
Hello, this is Bobby Bonds of the New York Yankees. We know how important the number 9 is in the game of baseball, but the number 9 also means something special to an expectant mother because normally the mother's body serves as her baby's home for its first 9 months. Proper nutrition is especially important at this time because what the mother eats is the only nutrition the unborn baby gets. Eat well for your baby's good health. The March of Dimes says, be good to your baby before it is born.
Here's a tip from your Better Business Bureau on the metric system. You know, the worldwide trend today is toward a universal system of measurement, the metric system. The names of this new system may sound strange to you at first, but fortunately, there are only a few words that have to be learned for everyday use, and these are the millimeter, centimeter, meter, and kilometer for describing length and distance, the milliliter and liter for capacity or volume, the gram, kilogram, and ton for weight, the kilometer per hour for highway speed, and the degree Celsius or centigrade for temperature. You're already using some of these terms more than you may realize. For example, when you go to the supermarket, you see weights expressed in grams on more and more packaged items. Now, for more information on this whole metric system, write to Metric Information Office, National Bureau of Standards, Washington, D.C. She's an old lady now, and an old friend in my family, and she is a remarkable woman. She's more sedentary than in past years, since she's in her 90s, but she is still slim, and her white hair frames a shrewd and kindly face. She never married, and for most of her years was a baby nurse. Only the last quarter of her life has she taken to being companion to other elderly and lonesome ladies, except for one other time, near the beginning of her life. And this is Ellen Muir's story about that haunting and terrifying experience.
Young as I was then, I had a strange feeling about Malvern Grange. When I first saw it, dark and shadowed at the end of the long drive, lined by the great shade trees, it made an eerie black tunnel on that otherwise bright moonlit night. It was the very picture of the haunted house. And fat, wheezy old Joe Wellman driving me by trap from the railroad station didn't help me to feel much easier in my mind.
Well, hello there, missy. I reckon you'd be Hester Milgram's niece he's expecting.
Yes, sir.
Ellen Muir, right?
That's me.
I'm Joe Wellman. Pleased to meet you. Jack of all trades. Gardener, groom, handyman, and general bodyguard to all them lonesome women out to the Grange. This all the luggage you got?
Yes, sir. Oh, no, I can carry it.
Oh, why, bless you, little one. Ain't no weight at all, even for an old geezer like me. Now, come on. I got a horse and trap waiting to drive you off to the Grange. Yes, sir, you sure don't take after Hester. You're a right pretty little thing. What's the matter? Cat got your tongue?
Oh, no, sir.
I didn't say anything out of line, did I?
Wasn't that. I just didn't know what to answer.
Ellen, I want you to meet Jenny. She's a filly just like yourself.
Hello, Jenny. Oh, what a soft nose she has.
All right, Deb, your bag's aboard. It's getting on to twilight and we'd best be on our way. It's a long drive, so up you go. Did you get anything to eat on the way down the train?
Oh, no, sir.
Wasn't it a dining car?
Oh, yes, Mr. Wellman, but I didn't have enough money.
Well, right beside you on the seat, there's a bag of apples there. Hey!
I don't want to take your apples.
Oh, bless you, little miss. I brought you those from the Golden Lion, where I was having a pint while waiting for the train. So just fire away.
Well, that was very kind of you. To tell you the truth, I am powerful hungry.
Well, those will keep you going till you get to the Grange. Only don't fill up all the way, because I know your Aunt Hester has tea and a currant cake all waiting for you time you get home. Now, what'd I say wrong?
Nothing wrong. Just...
home. That was it, wasn't it, huh? You're homesick.
Kind of. I've never been away. Away from home.
Not much of a one you're coming to at that.
What do you mean?
Well, it's a gloomy old place for a bright young lady like you, stuck off in nowheres with a bunch of old clucking hens and her.
My aunt's very nice. She came to see us once.
Oh, aye, Miss Milgram's all right if you don't cross her. Her heart may be kind enough, but her word is short and her word is law. And don't you ever forget it.
You mentioned her. Who is her?
Ah, well, now, that's something else again. You wanted to watch her and see she's possessed by old Nick himself. She's more than a half a ghost.
Ghost?
A ghost, yes, sir. She's near 100, you know. All wizened up and wrinkled like a witch with long, pointy nails and hands that are all skin and bone.
You mean the madam? Madam Litton.
Who else? Lord knows how she's lived this long. But the good Lord also knows we all hope and pray she'll live to be 150. Our jobs depend on it. When she goes, we go. And so does Malvern Grange.
But there's a grandson. Doesn't he live there?
Dr. Litton. Sakes alive. No, he can't abide the place. He lives and practices in the city. Now, here it is dark enough for the moon to be the only light and me scaring the living daylights out of you. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's all right, Mr. Wellman.
I didn't mean to, Miss Muir. I just wanted to prepare you for your visit.
Well, this isn't a visit. I've come here to work.
A little thing like you?
I'm strong. And I can cook and clean as good as any. And things haven't been so good with my pa. My sister Becky is old enough now to help Ma out with the six young ones, and also, I had to hire out. And my aunt needed help. That's why I'm here.
Well, I see you can talk up well enough when you're of a mind to.
Well, mainly when I'm nervous, sort of, and it does sound a bit scary.
Well, we won't talk on it anymore. Though I must say, it's a queer household, right enough.
Is it much further?
Nope. We're almost there.
What's the house like?
Oh, why, bless you, it's a great black and white house it is, with black beams running up and down and across, and the gables looking out quite as a sheet. Except like now when the moon is out and it throws the shadows of the trees on them and you can count the leaves' shadows dancing in the wind across the stucco till they look like crabs scuttling across the sand.
Ooh.
Only upsy-downsy like, you know.
Ooh.
But here, you might see for yourself. Here's the drive.
My heart was in my mouth as we drove up the drive. Trees were so big that four people spreading their arms and touching fingers could scarce reach round. And it was like a long, great black tunnel there beneath them, with the big house crouching at the end, as huge as a giant, or an ogre in some old fairy tale. I wanted to jump out and run away just as fast as my legs would carry me.
Oh, here you are at last, Ellen.
I'm sorry if I'm late, Aunt Hester.
Well, you're not late, child. It's just been an anxious wait. You've come a long journey. Joe, take the bag up to the first room by the head of the stairs.
Yes, Miss Milgram. See you tomorrow, little missy.
Oh, yes, Mr. Wellman, and thanks for the ride and the conversation.
Pleasure, I'm sure.
He is a hired man, Ellen. Call him Joe. We must all keep our place around here.
But, Aunt Hester...
Do as I say. Now, first... welcome to Malvern Grange.
Thank you.
Well, come. We'll go up to my room for a moment and let you freshen up. And then we'll go into the housekeeper's salon where Meg will have something for you to eat. You'll be hungry, I expect.
Oh, not too. Joe gave me some apples on the way.
And what else did he give you on the way? And earful about all of us, I'll warrant.
Oh, just about Mrs. O'Meara and... well, I don't know whether she is a miss or a missus. He just called her Judith Squires.
Mrs. O'Meara will be Meg to you. She's a servant.
But, Auntie, so am I.
You are my niece, and I am the housekeeper. As I said, everything in its place. Since you are young, they can call you by your first name.
And the other lady?
Judith? Oh, well, she's far on in years. You may call her Miss Squires. This is my bedroom. I'll put the candle over here. And while you take off your coat and hat, I'll just put a taper to the overhead lamp so we can see a little better. There we are. Now then.
Yes, ma'am.
Aunt.
Yes, Aunt.
What did Joe tell you about the madam?
You mean the old lady who's sick? Mrs. Litton?
That's who I mean. The madam.
Why, he...
Don't lie to me, girl.
No, ma'am. No, Aunt Esther. He just said I shouldn't tell anyone.
Well, I'm sure he did. Tell me what nonsense he might have been filling your head with.
Oh, it is nonsense, isn't it? I mean, she isn't possessed by the devil. And she's not half a ghost, is she, Aunt Esther?
I knew it. The answer to you, Ellen, is that the madam is none of your business. She's a very old lady, and she's not in the best of health. Now, that's all you ever need to know of her. You're not here to take care of her. You're here to do housework that the rest of us haven't time for. Now, that's the end of that. Come. We'll go into my dining sitting room, and you can meet Meg and get something to eat.
Where's Mrs. Squires?
She's upstairs sitting with the madam. That Judith fallen asleep again. You'll find Meg through that door. I have to go upstairs to the madam.
In a second, my aunt was hurrying up the stairs, one black mittened hand shielding the candle flame from blowing out in the rush. And as the dark closed around me, I hurried for the door she had pointed out to me while I could still see it. The room I entered was all paneled in oak. A fine fire blazing away. Plenty of light and tea and hot cakes and meat smoking away on the table. And there was Meg. Fat and jolly, big as a house.
Well, and here's our new companion at last. Oh, pretty little thing that'll put a bit of light in this gloomy old house, maybe. You'll be Ellen. Well, I'm Meg O'Meara.
Pleased to meet you, Mrs. O'Meara.
No, let's make it Meg the morning. For though I've a year or 20 on you, we're the only ones in this house with the juice of youth still bubbling in our veins.
Thank you.
Oh, my darling, you must be hungry. Sit down then and eat. Oh, where's Miss Milgram?
Something happened upstairs.
Oh?
There was someone with a weird sort of laugh. And Aunt Hester went running upstairs.
Oh, that'll be the madam. Ah, Lord preserve us, I suppose Judith fell asleep again. Duh, and if the old one got away, well, never mind. Your aunt will take care of it. Oh, sit you down, darling, and start eating and forget the other while you can.
So far, certainly a haunting experience. The terror is yet to come, and eventually, the matter of conscience. Let us leave poor little Ellen to her delicious meal, for Peg O'Meara's cooking is as good as her heart, and return shortly to that haunting gabled house.
Come on, America, refresh the natural way.
With summer juice, 100% pure orange juice from Florida. Anita Bryant here reminding you that orange juice is rich in vitamin C with minerals too, because even in summer, good nutrition should never be on vacation.
Orange juice, America's summer juice.
From the Florida orange growers.
Earthquakes, the shifting, trembling earth, falling objects, debris are a constant threat to life and property for many countries, including the United States. And should a natural disaster occur, you can count on the American Red Cross being there, reaching out to the people. The Red Cross Disaster Program meets the urgent needs of victims after a disaster or in advance of a potential crisis, extending a helping hand, just like a good neighbor. And that's what we are, your American Red Cross.
O Great Spirit, whose voice in the winds I hear, and whose breath give life to all the world, hear me.
The voice is Iron Eyes Cody of the Cherokee Nation. The words are a prayer first spoken 400 years ago by his people, a people who love the land.
Make me walk in beauty. Make my heart respect all you have made. Make me wise that I may know all you have taught my people, the lessons you have hidden in every rock.
In some Americans today, that spirit is reborn. Throughout the land, areas of thoughtless litter and pollution are being restored to their natural beauty. And yet we still have so far to go. So everyone must get involved. To contact the Keep America Beautiful team nearest you, write Keep America Beautiful, 99 Park Avenue, New York, New York. People start pollution. People can stop it.
A public service message of this station and the Advertising Council.
It's fascinating to sit and watch Ellen Muir tell her story today, calmly and sadly, looking back over 70 years to when it happened. It is easy to understand how vividly she remembers the young girl who lived it, the Ellen Muir who sat in that haunted house, homesick and hungry, and in spite of her jolly companion Meg, still filled with an inescapable premonition of a terror yet to be faced.
You'll have some more cake, Ellen.
And a spot more tea.
Oh, no, thank you, Meg. I'm so full, I couldn't even manage another crumb. Oh. Thank you. I wonder what's keeping Aunt Hester so long.
Well, I'm thinking it's Judith getting the tongue lashing this time. She probably fell fast asleep like she's apt to do. And the old madam was up and away.
But I thought she was bedridden.
Well, no, she is and she isn't. Days will go by and she won't open the curtains on that old four-poster she sleeps in. Just stays shut up in there, except for us bringing her meals. But the other days...
But the other days what?
Well, the other day she's a troublesome old lady, no doubt of that. You have to be sharp watching her, or glory be to Mary, she'll be into the fire or out the window.
How old is she?
Well, you wouldn't believe it. 99, her last birthday. And that, 8 months gone by...
Could I ask another question, Meg?
Ask away. What's the harm? Tis not to say I'll answer.
Is the old lady well in health?
Well, no harm in asking that. She's... Well, she's been a bit off for a bit lately. But she's much better this last week. I dare say she'll last out her 100 years or more yet. Oh, here comes your aunt down the hall.
I couldn't tell much from my aunt's face when she came in. It was calm, and she didn't seem put out. But she drew Meg aside and started to talk with her. In the warm room with company and good food in my stomach, I felt more at home and started to look about. There were pictures on the wall, and pretty old china things in the cupboard. And there was a door open in the wainscot. And inside, a closet, I saw this queer thing hanging up inside. I was just going to look at it when...
What are you doing in that closet?
Oh, Aunt Hester. I was just trying to make myself at home.
Never poke your nose into anything in this house that isn't your business.
I didn't mean
what
to.
What bat do you have in your hand?
It's so queer. All leather and steel and buckles and things. I don't know what it is.
Nor is it your business to. While you stay here, don't you ever meddle with anything that doesn't belong to you. That's the first and last thing you have to learn about Malvern Grange. Now give it to me. Oh, Mrs. Milgram, the child meant no harm. Well, it's better that she learns to mind her P's and Q's. I don't want any repetitions of... She's my niece, Meg. I want her protected.
My aunt took me up to my bed and settled me in for the night. My only instructions were that since my room was next to the madam's, I was to be ready to call if need be, and 6:30 was rising time. I lay for a while awake, nervous-like. I think it was all the tea in me, and the thought of the picture Joe Wellman had given me, the strange old lady next door. Next morning, I slept late, and by the time I got down for breakfast, my aunt and the local doctor were upstairs with the madam, and Meg and I were alone in the kitchen.
Oh, there you are, little Ellen. Country fresh scrambled eggs. Now, you eat them all up. You look a bit pale. Did you sleep well?
I slept sound enough. I'm ashamed I'm up so late.
Well, it's just to show you that your aunt's not all pepper and vinegar. She's the one who said you shouldn't be disturbed till you rested up from your trip. Now, eat your eggs. I'll get you some tea.
Oh, if you don't mind, I'd rather have milk.
Well, and so you should be, darling, to bring the roses back to those pale little cheeks. You know, you don't look like you slept so well.
Well, my room is next to Mrs. Well, you know, the madam. And I thought there was quite a lot of coming and going, the way it sounded.
Oh, sure, and the old beldame has been in one of her tantrums from the night before you arrived till today. She takes fits of the sulks, do you see? Sometimes she won't let us dress her, and other times she won't allow us to take the clothes off of her. Oh, and Lord of mercy, Ellen, child, you should see the closet after closet she has full of old-fashioned stuff.
And she still likes to wear them?
Oh, Lord above us, sometimes we can't get her out of them till the doctor comes. Like today.
You mean she goes to bed wearing them?
Ball dresses, evening clothes, and sometimes even a sable or an ermine stole. Now, what am I telling you this for, love? Just none of your business. She's an old lady, living well past her time, for some reason God only knows. She was a great beauty in her day, so they say. And proud.
Will I get to see her ever, do you think?
Well, I don't know, darling. Just as well, you shouldn't.
I would have liked to have seen the old lady. But she might as well have been up in the city for all the clothes I got. I did my cleaning and my needlework. And once or twice a week, the town doctor came in to check the madam. Nights, after my dinner, before the twilight, my aunt made me go out to get some air in the gardens. I was always glad when I came back. Trees were so big, and the place so dark and lonesome. It always made me cry and think of home. Usually, I'd go down to the stable and try to find Joe. Sometimes we could talk.
It's none of my business, Miss Mueller, but why don't you go on back home? This is no place for a nice, fresh little girl like you.
My aunt is very kind and Meg is fun. And I told you my pa isn't doing so well. It's important I have my job here. I can't let my ma and pa down. Or my aunt. And it's not so bad here with you and Meg. And Aunt Hester. And as it works out, I seldom see Mrs. Squires and never the madam herself.
Well, that's all to the good so far. But there's something evil lies on this house and this family. I wouldn't want it ever to touch you.
I'm not so young as I apparently seem, Joe. I can take care of myself. In spite of all my tremors and silly fears, I meant that when I said it to Joe. My life was very simple, actually. I did the laundry, some cleaning, and sometimes I sat in the great chamber in which the madam slept, the curtains drawn around the bed, tending what, for all intents and purposes, might have been a corpse. Till one evening, when I was in my own room reading, my aunt was in the next room with the madam, and of a sudden, I could hear them talking. I pricked up my ears, but it was nothing but a mumble, till I stole ever so quiet to my own door. Opened it a crack to listen. Then I could hear the old lady speak at last. A queer, high voice, like a bird. I don't know how to describe it. But for all it cracked and trembled, it was clear enough.
One can't hurt anyone, ma'am, without the Lord permits.
Ah, but that's what it is, you see. What it is.
Oh, now, hush, now, don't get yourself worked up.
They're all against me, but they're lies. They tell lies, you see, and they're jealous. Envy, because I'm beautiful. So they lie. He believes them, maybe.
Believes them about what?
That's
let them pull all the faces they want, ma'am, and say what they will. Just remember, if the Lord is for us, who can be against us?
Oh, I love him so, do you see? I couldn't bear to share him. But now he's dead. Dead and gone. Oh, dead and gone.
I kept listening with my ear to the door a long time. Not another word did I hear. So finally, I closed it quietly and went back to my picture book. Till suddenly...
Oh, shh! Will you wake her again after the trouble I've had getting her to sleep?
The madam?
Who else? All dressed up like she was off to the inauguration ball. Not even her wig or her slippers would she take off. Oh, I am exhausted. Now, listen to me. Move your candle and your book over to your door and keep it open so you can watch and listen. I've left Madame Litton's door ajar. And I'm off to have a cup of tea and a bite. And when Judith and I come back up, you can go down and Meg will give you supper in my room. But if you hear her stir, mind, give me a call. Pull shut her door and hang on to the handle as if for dear life till I and the others come up to help.
I sat there, trying to keep my eyes on the book, but they kept being drawn down the shadowed hall to the other door. I couldn't hold it back. I had to have one peep, just to see what the old lady was like. I was near blinded the moment I entered the room. I'd never been in it after dark before, and it was ablaze with 22 wax candles. I tiptoed to the bed and listened. I could hear her breathing, rusty-like, the kind of gurgle. Slowly I parted the curtain and looked in. There she was. Just lying as Meg described her that first day. Scarlet and green and satin and silk and lace. A big powdered wig. Heels as tall as my hand. And as sharp as her big crooked nose and her long pointy nails. Half of the whites of her eyes were open. Her throat rattled as she breathed. I was frozen stiff with fright. And before I knew it, she opened her eyes and sat up, spun around and dropped her shoes to the ground with a clack. She stood up, pointing at me with a finger, like a corpse come to life.
You old young imp. You little brat. Why did you say it to my face?
Say what, madam?
Why did you say I killed the boy?
What boy?
You know. Tell me or I'll shake the life out of you. I'll rake you with my nails. You're the black light. I'll spoil your beauty.
No.
Oh, stop backing away. I have you in a corner. Now tell me. Why did you say
moment of terror has arrived. Ellen, backed into a corner of the room, faces the demoniacal old beldame who advances on her, mad yellow-white eyes rolling in her head, her ancient wrinkled hands with the nails mounted on the fingers like knives reaching for her face and her throat. I'll return shortly with Act Three.
The following fable is presented to make you want to buy a Buick.
As a kid, everything I had was somebody else's.
My, he certainly has his mother's eyes.
And his father's hair. Boy, what a hairy little person.
Well, I finally got something to call my own. A beautiful Buick LeSabre. With my kind of room, my kind of ride, and my kind of style. Heck, I even let my dad borrow it now and then. Because I love to hear people say, my, he certainly has his son's Buick.
Buick. Dedicated to the free spirit in just about everyone.
Last month, I noticed my oldest boy. He seemed so much older. I spent a lot of time away from home, but boy, that was a shock. He's growing up without me. I figured if I was going to have any influence in his life at all, I'd better start now. So I set aside one night a week, and each week I take a different child, and we go and do whatever they want. And you know, it's amazing what it's done for the kids. And me.
Give your children everything. Give them your time. A thought from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the Mormons.
Do you think a computer programmer needs the use of his legs? New York University doesn't. They hired a man who's almost totally paralyzed. Yet they'll be the first to admit Tom Clancy's one of the best computer programmers they ever had. Of course, Tom Clancy's just one person, but there are millions of men and women in this country very much like him. People who have accepted their disabilities and come through rehabilitation with skills, determination, and a sense of responsibility. Yes, Tom Clancy's got a very good job. But what about all the others? The Director of Vocational Rehabilitation in your state has a file of highly qualified people in every field, ready, willing, and able to work. If you're not in a position to hire them, talk to someone who is. And next time there's an opening in your company, ask him to write the Director of Vocational Rehabilitation. His office is in your state capital.
A public service message brought to you on behalf of the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare and the Advertising Council.
A story in three stages. First, haunting. Second, replete with terror. Both of these shall continue. But last, and far from least, the matter of conscience. The complex of ethical and moral principles which controls or inhibits the actions and thoughts of an individual. We begin now, certainly, with Ellen's conscience, which was bothering her quite as much as her memory of terror. Now that she was safely down in the sitting room with Meg, while Mrs. Squires and her aunt were upstairs greeting the madam.
Now drink your tea, Ellen. I put a wee drop of brandy in it to calm you down, dear.
Oh, I'm really all right now, Meg. I just lost my head a little. It wasn't that I couldn't have handled her physically. It was just, I was so scared.
Oh, sure. Sure, she's enough to scare the devil when she gets into one of her fits.
I'm sorry I wasn't strong enough to fight away being curious.
Well, this time curiosity didn't kill the cat. And I'm a mite curious myself for all that.
About what?
Would you say those words again the old lady said to you?
She said, why do you say I killed the boy?
And did you say she killed the boy?
But I, Meg, why would I say a thing like that?
Oh, just a curious thing, love. That doesn't matter. Come on now, we'd best see you off to bed. That drop of brandy will give you a nice, quiet sleep. I can see your eyes beginning to droop already.
There, Jenny, my love. Nothing like a nice bath and a good rub down, but what ails you, eh? Oh, hello there, little missy. Haven't seen you since all the excitement a day or so gone. How are you, Miss Muir?
Oh, Joe, when we're alone, can't it be just Ellen?
Oh, I don't know. Might get me in trouble with Miss Milgram.
That'd make two of us.
Well, she'll come around. She's a good woman at heart, and She knows there isn't a single solitary person in the world without a bump of curiosity.
Yes, I know Aunt Hester's only strict and not unkind. The trouble is...
Trouble is what? The
trouble is I'm still suffering from that bump.
Curiosity.
Uh-huh. What boy?
Well, that's an old story, Missy. But if you want to hear it, I'll tell it as sure as I can. Now, mind, this is only secondhand from my father, who was groom here before me, and it's 70 years ago.
You don't have to tell me if you don't want to, Joe.
Miss... Ellen, what's the point, Art? Maybe it'll help you feel better, and that's all the reward I'd want. The madam, Mrs. Litton, oh, she was a great beauty in her day, tell me. But when she married the owner of Malvern Grange, he was a widower, and he had a son about 9 years old.
Is that the boy she was talking about?
Well, I suppose.
Well, why would she think she killed him?
Oh, that was a terrible tragedy, little Miss Ellen. The boy, from what I hear, was a fine young man, full of energy and daring. There are those who say he was allowed too much liberty, because one day... he just plain disappeared. And the hide and the hair of him was seen from that day forward. Save only his hat found by the lake under a hawthorn bush.
But where do they think he went? What happened to him?
Well, his little boat was missing, so he must have drowned.
Oh, how awful.
My pa said that Mr. Litton bore up under it, but the madam went to pieces for a long while.
But she must have had children then, if...
Oh, yes. After she got over the loss, she had a boy, Mr. Stanley, that was, who was the father of Dr. Edmund. Mr. Stanley died a few years ago, so the estate now belongs to Dr. Edmund, the old lady's grandson.
To have spent all those years worrying about something she couldn't help, and now to have it all back up at the end.
Huh? Oh, what are you talking about, Ellen?
Oh, I was just thinking. I know it's a good thing we all have a conscience, but it can be a terrible thing, too. Poor Madam Litton must be just as conscience-stricken at what she might have done as I am at what I shouldn't have.
What's that?
She probably blames herself for not watching the little boy more closely. Just as I blame myself for trying to watch something closely that was none of my business.
Oh, now, Ellen, a young girl, curious, you weren't to blame.
No more than the madam, I guess. But try to tell your conscience that. My conscience was not to be easily set at rest, as I found out only too soon.
Now, Ellen, will you stop your moping?
Oh, how can I? Ever since the doctor came and I found out what that contraption hanging on the door was for.
Oh, bless you, child. It's not the first time she's been in the strait waistcoat. She's been in it many a time when she became violent.
But does she have to be shut up in it?
Well, the doctor's afraid she'll take another fit of madness as she's done before.
But it's all my fault.
Oh, now how could it be your fault?
Because I did something I shouldn't have.
Oh, dear Mary in heaven, if we all lived our lives without doing some little thing we shouldn't have, we'd all be in the same leather jerkins.
Well, it's on my conscience.
Well, me darling, I wish you only one thing.
What?
That should be the heaviest thing you ever bear on your conscience.
Meg's words made me feel better. Till the end came. A wild, terrible end. The screaming and the begging for no one knew what. And at long last, the soul made its flitting from her body, and she was at rest. Dr. Litton was written for, but he was off in France on a vacation. And the delay would be so long that the local doctor agreed she could not be kept in her place. And the old lady of Malvern Grange was laid away to rest in the church where her ancestors were buried. While we all waited for Dr. Litton's return, they moved me from my room, away from the old ladies, to one by the end of the hall. There was little in the room, but a bed and a big bureau. So a few things were moved in from the madam's room, which had been stripped when she was coffined, Among them, the big looking glass she used to dress up in front of and admire herself in her finery. The night after I moved there, that's where she came from in the middle of the night, the great key in her hand, her eyes fixed on the alcove in the wall at the foot of my bed. With a blast of cold air, and I could see everything through her. The nightstand, the window frame, the pattern on the wall. Straight for the big bureau in the alcove she went, key outstretched. And as she vanished, I came alive and screamed as I've never screamed in my life.
All right, Ellen. All right. It's all right
I'm
now.
Sorry. I'm sorry, Aunt Esther. Oh, maybe it was a dream.
Now, just tell me. Had the appearance that you saw a key in its hand?
Yes.
Was it like this one?
Why, that's it. The very image.
Are you sure?
As sure as sure.
Well, that'll do, child. You sleep here with me tonight. And the doctor will be here by noon tomorrow. I'm sorry for what I've put you through.
The doctor arrived promptly at noon the following day. And after a half an hour or so, closeted with my aunt in the housekeeper's room, I was called in and introduced.
Now, what is this you say you saw, my dear?
It was your grandmother, Dr. Litton.
Well, you know my grandmother has been dead for nearly a month.
It was her. I mean, not alive, but a ghost.
You believe in ghosts?
I never did, sir, but I believe in this one. I could see right through her.
And you say that she just walked into the big high bureau and disappeared?
With a key in her hand.
This key?
Or its copy.
Hold on a minute. You mean the room at the end of that hall to the left, up the stairs?
Yes.
And the bureau, you say, is in the alcove?
Yes.
Come on. We're going up there and bring that key. All right, now, ladies, if you'll assist me. And don't try to lift, just slide it. You ready? There. Oh, easy. Easy. That's far enough. Now.
What is it, Dr. Litton?
When I was a boy, 25 years ago, an old servant we had told me there used to be a door here. By heaven, there it is. The plate and jewels used to be kept here before the big pantry was built. Give me that key. By Lord Harry, the lock turned. All right, now. Stand back, both of you, but hold that candle high. Here goes. Oh, good Lord.
What fell from the door as it opened was a small skeleton, its hands resting on the inside of the door, as if in a last plea for mercy. And as it fell to the floor, it all crumbled to dust, save for the small skull, which bounced and then rolled to my aunt's feet. That's all that was left from what had been shut up there all those years, except some jet buttons and a small green hafted knife.
The boy. He wasn't drowned. He was shut up here to die.
Oh, no. My grandmother couldn't have.
It's a rich family.
She wanted it all for her own child.
I damn myself for every minute of service I gave her.
You can't be sure.
When the boy disappeared, he was wearing a velvet suit with black jet buttons. You see? And his favorite possession was a green hafted knife. A knife from his father.
But I
and the key.
The key Ellen saw the ghost carry, I found at the bottom of your grandmother's chest, beneath her wigs and gloves and jewels and silks and satins, under which she tried to hide her guilt. Well, it served her little at the last. She's where she feared she'd be in the end. With a black devil in the deeps of hell. Where she belongs.
No wonder Madame Lytton was afraid to die, and equally afraid to live. For what a hell her later years must have become when ambition, desire, and greediness, like other emotions, are no longer strong and driving. Certainly no longer strong enough to still the pangs of conscience. I'll be back shortly.
Morning, Greenhaven State Prison. Today, Jerry Rice is getting out. He paid for his mistake. We paid, too, about 10,000 tax dollars a year to keep him there. And unless he gets a job, he'll probably go back in.
Wait till your daddy sees you. He's not going to recognize you, huh? You excited?
If you're someone with a job to give, you can do something about rising crime by giving a guy like Jerry Rice a job. He's been thoroughly screened, so you'll know all about him. You complain about rising crime and the billions of tax dollars used to fight it. Nothing can fight it better than jobs.
Welcome home, Daddy. Are you here forever?
Forever, honey.
The way to get this country working is to get people working. So if you have a job to give, call the National Alliance of Businessmen. Help America work.
A public service message of this station and the Advertising Council.
I find it hard nowadays to pass any neglected object by the water's edge without having to repress a shudder. A beer can, a pair of sunglasses, a sneaker, a child's pail, or most of all, a hat. For the moment I spot the object, I don't see it, but a poor little boy shut up to die in a sealed safe, where neither his cries nor his wild thumpings on the door or his prayers, if he knew how to say them, could be heard. Our cast included Jotta Rowland, Ann Petoniak, Joan Shea, and Ian Martin. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. And now, a preview of our next tale.
Well, how are you feeling, Liz?
I don't know. Far away, but still scared.
Oh, now you mustn't be.
I won't lose my leg.
You mustn't think about that.
Even if it's saved, will I dance again?
Whatever is to be, just leave it in God's hands.
Oh, it's so easy for you. Words, just words.
No, never just words, Liz. I've stayed with you because I wanted to help you find strength. Don't let it be for nothing. Let me have achieved at least that.
Nurse! 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 Somebody, help!
What is it? What's happened?
Chaplain Morgan. He just suddenly collapsed.
Nurse, take care of the patient. Orderly, get me another nurse from the floor right away.
Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by Buick Motor Division and by the Florida Orange Growers. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
Thank you.
the sound of bright and beautiful music. This is KIXI, Seattle.
News. President Ford at this hour is scheduled to begin a busy day of diplomacy in Helsinki, Finland. This is Doug Poling reporting on the CBS radio network. The president is due to have breakfast about now with Prime Minister Wilson of Britain. A little later, Mr. Ford is to meet with Soviet leader Brezhnev. The private discussions are to take place prior to the formal opening of the summit of the 35-nation European Security Conference. Mr. Ford arrived in Finland Tuesday following a two-day visit to Poland. Three astronauts are still recovering from the effects of toxic gas, the story reported by David Dow in Honolulu.
Apollo astronauts Stafford, Slayton, and Brand will spend part of their 10-day convalescence period undergoing debriefing on their 9-day Apollo-Soyuz space mission. A debriefing team will be flown here to, along with the astronauts' families, to join them in their secluded convalescence quarters. Just where they will be is being decided now. Meanwhile, doctors at the Tripler Army Medical Center announced today that the flight crew's lung congestion caused by combustion gases has cleared up enough to allow them to leave the hospital. NASA spokesman Larry King read the doctor's statement.
The astronauts continue to feel well. The chest x-rays taken on all three astronauts show resolution of all previous abnormalities caused by the irritant. The astronauts will be discharged for a period of convalescence as previously discussed.
The doctors have prescribed the 10-day period of semi-isolation to allow the astronauts' lungs to recover their immunity to infection. David Dow, CBS News, Honolulu.
More news in a moment.
Tavern keepers were amazed when a carriage turned unheralded into the dooryard and outstepped the President of the United States. The coachman would investigate the stables, the President, the rooms. The president is George Washington. The writing is from Time Magazine's bicentennial essay this week by historian James Thomas Flexner, a revealing report on how informal the presidency once was and how formidable that office has become today. Each week, every week, Time puts a world of information at your fingertips. Pick up a copy today. Hidden in the ranks of British intelligence is a double agent. His collaboration with Moscow has already caused the death of many key operatives. Who is this treacherous spy? Discover the startling answer in John le Carré's newest and most brilliant novel of suspense, Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy, the number one international bestseller. The author of The Spy Who Came In From the Cold now gives you the spy novel to which all others will be compared. Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy, a Bantam book. Wherever paperbacks are sold.
There was more trouble in Detroit Tuesday night. About 300 young demonstrators clashed with police. It's also reported some gangs of young people ransacked the tavern owned by a white man who shot and killed a young black man Monday night. That incident touched off a wave of looting and burning on Detroit's northwest side. The government has some more good news about the economy. It reports the index of leading economic indicators rose 1.9% during June, up for the fourth straight month. Federal Reserve Board Chairman Arthur Burns said Tuesday a tax increase might be needed next year. His suggestion drew sharp criticism from economist Walter Heller.
A tax increase in 1976 would be dead wrong. It's exactly what the doctor didn't order. And with the economy moving up nicely in 1975, but with sustained recovery doubtful in 1976, tax increase is simply a wrong way Corrigan economics.
Economist Walter Heller. The United States and 15 other countries have voted to end the economic and political sanctions against Cuba. The decision, no surprise, came Tuesday night at the meeting of the Organization of American States in San Jose, Costa Rica. All OAS members are now free to resume relations with Cuba if they so desire. For the first time this year, Congress has succeeded in overriding a presidential veto. The House completed the action on Tuesday, voting 384-43 to set aside the president's veto of a $2 billion health services bill. Mr. Ford wanted a smaller version. More news after this.
We did it before, and we can do it again. We've got the cars moving, and Chrysler Corporation's gonna keep it that way.
Get away, Joe!
This time, it's a nationwide sale on new 1975 cars and trucks. you can get $300 cash back on full-size Chryslers, $300 cash back on Dodge Monacos and Plymouth Grand Furies.
Terrific, Joe!
$300 back on the cars with room and luxury. Full-size Chryslers, Dodge Monacos, and Plymouth Grand Furies.
Yeah, Joe!
Listen, folks, we did it before, and we can do it again. This time, it's $300 cash back. These are the cars that are priced to move. Chrysler, Plymouth, and Dodge. Come on down to your participating Dodge or Chrysler Plymouth dealer. This time, it's a nationwide sale.
We did it before. We'll do it again.
For retail customers only.
The Federal Trade Commission says it's going to go ahead with a probe into the operations of 11 natural gas producers. The FTC says it wants to determine if the producers tried to create a false impression that there is a shortage of natural gas. The Senate Tuesday night voted 58-29 to give annual cost of living pay raises to members of Congress, federal judges, and high government officials, including Vice President Rockefeller. The measure now goes to the House. Conservatives, led by James Allen of Alabama, tried to knock out the salary increases. Doug Poling, CBS News.
A KIXI News update. Pieces of charcoal 16,000 years old have been found in an archaeological dig in Avella, Pennsylvania, considered the earliest sign of human habitation in the Western Hemisphere and evidence that people crossed the Bering Strait from Asia into North America between 20 and 30,000 B.C.